Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
So we've been making comments for 5 years now. It's over 100 episodes and counting. And our plan? Well, it's to keep making more seasons, even more episodes. And when I say we, I don't just mean the comments team. I'm including you, our listeners and supporters. We can't make this show without you. We can't keep bringing you exceptional reporting every week without your support. We want to make it as easy as possible for you to become a Canada Land supporter. So, from now until the end of May, we have a special deal for our listeners. Sign up now for just $2 a month for the next 6 months. You'll get access to all the episodes of Commons 1 week early and ad-free, as well as exclusive bonus content from all of our shows. There's discounts on merch, tickets to our live events, and so much more. This is a limited-time offer, and it's a pretty great deal that helps support our journalism. Just go to canadaland.com/join or click the link in your show notes to become a supporter today. Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to join these two in holy matrimony. And it must be said that this is an unlikely union. Up until recently, they were bitter rivals engaged in ferocious competition. But as they say, love is like wildflowers. It is found in the most unlikely places. And so here we stand today, before Rogers Communications and Shaw Communications, to consecrate their blessed merger in the sight of God and the federal government. But before we get to the vows, I must ask that if anyone knows of any reason that these two should not be merged, speak now or forever hold your peace. Oh, wow. Okay, I'm seeing a lot of hands go up. It appears that every single Canadian has raised their hands. I see over here on the right that, who is that? Oh, the competition commissioner's raised his hand, and I'm sorry, what is your objection? Oh, you think this new couple will be too powerful? Well, that is a strange thing to say, but I will certainly take note of it. And on the left over here, oh, is that the federal industry minister? Okay, yes, he's trying to get my attention. What was that? You're okay with this merger as long as Shaw Communications sells its child Freedom Mobile to that Quebecois gentleman in the back? I will have to check the legalities of that, but I'm glad we're making some progress. Okay, for all the other objections, let's maybe form a line over here, and I'll take them one by one. Okay, yes, let's start with you, sir. What is it? Oh, you think your mobile bill will go up? Well, now that that's over, back to the show. I'm Archie Mann, and this, by the way, is Commons, a very serious show about serious issues. And there's nothing bigger or more serious today than the proposed merger between Rogers and Shaw. Here's where things stand.
The Competition Bureau completely opposes the merger, full stop. But the federal government has indicated that they would be okay with the merger on the primary condition that Shaw sells Freedom to Quebec-based Videotron. And right now, Rogers and Shaw are fighting the Competition Bureau in the Competition Tribunal over whether or not this whole merger should go through. And if our history is any indication, this merger will go through, despite the fact that you'd be hard-pressed to find a single Canadian who's in favor of it. So how did we get to this point where a merger as blatantly bad for Canadians as this one is likely to be approved? And why are our laws so weak when it comes to combating monopolies? Well, the truth is that this is how Canada has worked for a very long time. For 150 years, Canadian politicians have been talking out of both sides of their mouths. They claim that promoting competition and preventing massive corporations from taking advantage of their market power is a priority for them. And then they pass laws that do the opposite.
We are really trying to reverse a way of thinking that has been around since our founding. In the United States, there's a really good story about returning to a golden era of addressing concentrated power. My name is Kelvin Bester. I'm a co-founder of the Canadian Anti-Monopoly Project, or CAMP.
The Boston Tea Party, one of the central events of the American Revolution, was a protest against the East India Company, which held a monopoly on tea. Here in Canada, the situation was very different. Not only were monopolies like the Hudson's Bay Company and the Canadian Pacific Railroad essential to the formation of the country, promoting big cartels was almost unofficial policy. The first Prime Minister, John A. Macdonald, introduced what he called the National Policy, which relied on heavy tariffs to keep out American products. And one consequence of that was the formation of dominant Canadian companies that had little incentive to compete. In 1912, a Canadian justice of the Supreme Court wrote that, quote, "The whole business fabric of the country was founded upon the restraint of competition." But there were attempts to rein in big business. In fact, the first ever modern competition law was introduced in Canada in 1888. The only problem? It was entirely useless. There was only ever one prosecution under that law, and even that one ended in an acquittal. But Canadians were becoming incensed about increased corporate concentration. Opposition to what were then called trusts or combines, but what we today would call conglomerates, was widespread. And so over the years, a succession of different so-called anti-combine bills were passed in Canada. And these were, to varying degrees, pretty goddamn useless. There were a handful of successful prosecutions over the years, and brief moments of serious enforcement, like in the late 30s and early 40s, but little of that was substantial. And even when regulators did try to intervene, it was rarely in the area of mergers.
Prior to 1986, merger law in Canada was criminal. So you had to prove, like, beyond a shadow of a doubt that these highly contested economic and legal questions were causing harm. There was never a successful merger case in the, 75 years that law was on the books.
And that's largely how it went until the 1980s, when the Mulroney government introduced the Competition Act. And that act is still the law today.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
So to understand why Rogers and Shaw are so confident that their merger will go through, this is the piece of legislation you have to understand. And so to help us with that, we're bringing back Vass Bednar, our friendly neighborhood competition expert that you heard from in episode one. So Vass, what is the Competition Act?
Well, we don't exactly share a birthday, but we're both established in 1986. So currently we're in our mid-late 30s. Would now be a good time for me to read you the purpose statement of the Competition Act?
Because
I kind of said that's not consumer-centric enough.
Yeah, let's hear it.
The Competition Act contains both criminal and civil provisions aimed at preventing anti-competitive practices in the marketplace. Its purpose is to maintain and encourage Competition Canada in order to promote the efficiency and adaptability of the Canadian economy, expand opportunities for Canadian participation in world markets, while at the same time recognizing the role of foreign competition in Canada, ensuring that small and medium-sized enterprises have an equitable opportunity to participate in the Canadian economy. I spend a lot of time freaking out about that one, and providing consumers with competitive prices and product choice. So we get that price and choice aspect.
I find that interesting because, as you were saying, so much of the defense of monopolistic behavior in this country comes down to this idea that we need to, one, compete globally, and especially to protect our markets against American intruders. Right. Whether you're looking at the Hudson's Bay Company 200 years ago, you're looking at supply management today, or even you're looking at telecom policy today. All the justification, if you talk to people who are proponents of the way things are done, usually is like, well, if we don't do it this way, the Americans are going to come in and drive us out. And it seems like those ideas are reflected in the preamble to our main piece of competition legislation.
We have this economic policy instrument that is so often standalone or siloed. When you think about how our other kind of policy attitudes towards economic growth have changed, building back better, a kind of more inclusive economy or inclusive growth, it's not reflected at all in the Competition Act. In fact, many have pointed out they're now often at odds with those goals.
Now, if there's one part of our competition laws that gets criticized the most, it's probably the efficiencies defense. Tell me about that.
I often refer to it as the get out of jail card or a trump card that we've built into our legislation, because the efficiencies defense says if two firms, two or more, I guess, that are proposing to merge can demonstrate, even if their merger is going to lead to excessive concentration or have quote unquote irreparable harm, that if they can demonstrate there are efficiencies that are gained through this, often that comes actually through layoffs.
We know what efficiency
means. You know what the code is, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Then we allow the merger to go through. And it's very perplexing. The Rogers-Shaw merger that's been making headlines and I think quite captivating to people because it has implications for their everyday lives that they can feel and sort of sense seems to hinge on that defense. But what's interesting about it is it's one thing to argue the efficiency defense to the competition tribunal or the competition commissioner with a bunch of lawyers. It's a very different activity to try to rationalize that to the public. And I think intuitively we're seeing people pushing back and saying, what do you mean we're going to permit these kinds of mergers? Something seems off. This isn't passing the smell test.
It just seems like it totally undermines the entire kind of basis for competition policy in general. Like what the efficiencies defense clearly seems to state is if a merger is good for shareholders, it doesn't matter the harms it does to the public. And that's the entire point of competition policy, is to protect the public from what might benefit companies and their shareholders.
I think what you're hitting on is that people have an expectation that we have a consumer-centric Competition Act and that consumer lens or consumer protection lens is more embedded than it probably is.
And then there's the issue of resources. Keldon Bester used to work at the Competition Bureau. That's Canada's competition regulator and law enforcement agency. So I asked him, does the agency have the resources it needs to do its job?
Absolutely not. Canada's got a $2 trillion economy. The scope of the Competition Act is all markets in Canada at any time. In the States, you have not only the Federal Trade Commission, you have not only the Department of Justice Antitrust Division, but you have 50 attorneys general who have, you know, responsibility for both federal and their own state antitrust laws. And you have a, you know, quite active private bar for individuals and corporations to bring antitrust cases. And so What I think those all represent, among other things, is eyes on the ground of a, you know, an immense and complex economy. But at the same time, you know, a single organization can really only have so many boots on the ground. And I think beyond resourcing, very important, we need a more distributed system of enforcing our competition law.
But even when the Competition Bureau determines that a merger shouldn't go through, they can't actually stop it. They have to argue in front of a body called the Competition Tribunal. The Competition Tribunal is basically our competition court. It's made up of judges, economists, and corporate directors, and historically, it's been pretty friendly towards potential mergers. If the Competition Tribunal determines that a merger would indeed be anti-competitive, there's a few courses it can take. First up, the companies could just use that efficiencies defense. So if the money the companies would save from the merger outweighs the negative effects to the public, well, that's just too bad for Canadians. Merger approved. One of the most common solutions that the Competition Tribunal proposes is divestiture. So in the case of Rogers and Shaw, that would mean they just sell off Freedom Mobile and then we have no problem. But there's one very simple, very easy solution that's almost never recommended.
In our competition law, and this is the case in other countries as well, we like to try to do very clever and complicated things to solve the problem instead of the very simple and effective thing, which is, you know, just say no.
Just say no. And that's actually what the Competition Bureau is arguing should happen for Rogers Shaw. Just don't let them do it.
Rogers Shaw is pretty apocalyptic. This is a national merger involving a maverick player in a market where we know we get some of the world's worst price outcomes. So to not come out strongly against this would be, you know, truly depressing. So the fact that they've come out strong is, let me be clear, fantastic. And the way that they've approached it, I think, from my perspective, is the right way to do it. But if they weren't to have done that, it would be like, you know, how much lower can we go, really? I applaud them for what they're doing, but it's about to run into an administrative body and a body of law that doesn't want a simple and effective solution.
And the Competition Bureau faces other challenges, too.
Their toolkit is a little bit weak. So their ability to do something called a market study, to compel the information that they need, they just don't really have it. And we see peer jurisdictions that are able to do this. So not only is the evidentiary burden on the Bureau really high, but it's also really hard for them to get that information. And we also take a very kind of deep econometric approach, which also underpins the efficiency defense. So we're expecting a regulator to do very complex mathematics on the essentially the back of a napkin sometimes, eyeballing and ballparking things because they can't compel the right information. I think the Bureau does a great job with the resources that it has, but we could do more to empower them to achieve better and arguably faster outcomes for Canadians on some of the cases they have.
The current competition commissioner is a guy named Matthew Boswell. So I asked Vass how she thinks he's doing. What do you make of Matthew Boswell, the competition commissioner?
I'm a big Boswell fan. I don't hide that. He seems very professional and fair-minded. He speaks really well. He's a great ambassador for the Bureau. He's had a great tenure there. The Bureau put forward, I think, one of the most revolutionary pieces of policy writing I've seen in a long time.
The document that Vass is talking about here was a set of recommendations that the Competition Bureau made about how the law could be changed to help improve antitrust enforcement in Canada.
The reason I'm so fascinated by their submission is not because I lack hobbies and friends, Arshi, because it was an example. It is an example of the enforcer going on the record and saying, given our enforcement experience and the tools that we currently have, these are our best possible recommendations on how we can improve the policy and the law, frankly, so that we can do a better job. And that is a North Star document for me in terms of who we also need to listen to if our enforcers and the experts we've trusted with the vigilance and oversight of this law are speaking out and up and saying, these are our perspectives on what needs to change. That's really, really, really important.
And just last month, the federal government has finally begun a long-promised consultation on possibly overhauling the Competition Act for the first time in three decades.
When we have that review, I want to hear more stories from small businesses and entrepreneurs about their experiences, both, you know, in an analog but also a digital economy. I'd like to see more civil society and consumer perspectives. I'd like to see more from unions, you know, the labor implications of competition, wage fixing, you know, NDAs, whatever.
You know, I find it a bit ironic that the Rogers-Shaw merger debacle is happening right now, because we're actually in a bit of a global antitrust moment. For the first time in decades, opposition to monopolies and corporate concentration is on the ascendant. Take the U.S., for example.
In the U.S., where we're used to seeing both state-led and federal antitrust suits. So one would or could imagine Canada, with our history of federalism, taking a more collaborative or integrated approach where we could see a little bit more experimentation across from provinces or just more collaboration. The other thing we see, and this is more of a shout out to the United States, the recent Biden executive order, it was last spring, taking an all of government approach to competition policy.
The Biden administration has made antitrust one of the central pillars of their economic and law enforcement agenda. We can have a debate about to what extent it's actually been successful, but it's clear that this approach is totally different from what we see here in Canada. And the same trends apply to Europe. VAS is hoping that the review of the Competition Act could lead to a similar antitrust moment in Canada, both within the government and from the public.
I like the all of government approach, and that could be different orders of government as well. So there's a best practice from the OECD called competition assessments that the Bureau has actually recommended that we don't do yet. It's kind of like the gender-based analysis of competition. So every time we announce a new major public policy, there's a component of that evaluation that just acknowledges and evaluates what it means for competition. That's actually a really good way to keep competition top of mind. We also need, of course, better and more research, more storytelling. We're starting to get it now in this inflationary period. And I'm very grateful to journalists that are taking these data-driven approach and helping us have these conversations. But in terms of what everyday people should do, I mean, unfortunately, the barrier to entry on this conversation is way too high, and it's been too high for way too long. And that barrier to entry staying high has privileges for those corporate interests that I think come at the expense of consumers for so long. If you can listen to a podcast about monopoly, you can put some ideas forward to the Bureau, it could be an email, and just be part of this and help us make it better.
But one thing that VAS thinks is necessary for change to happen is for the politicians to really take interest. That review of the Competition Act has begun, but still, few people on Parliament Hill have made fighting corporate concentration one of their main causes.
I sometimes joke that there's no one really to antitrust in Canada. We don't have that dedicated political champion emerging just yet, and they can be somebody who comes forward from outside of politics. I'm not saying it's me, but Canada does not have a Klobuchar, and we don't have a person who's in elected office. We have a couple of people who are dabbling and have been really consistent in the space, but that lack of sustained political championship for competition reform, that also hurts us too. And I think it's really hard to contest Canada's tendency toward consolidation in so many sectors.
We love to merge.
The urge to merge.
So with the politicians still taking a back seat, right now Canada's most prominent figure on these issues is the top competition cop, Matthew Boswell, the head of the Competition Bureau. So what does he think of the Rogers-Shaw merger? About the changes that need to come to our competition laws, and about whether or not there's something distinct about Canada that lends us to so much monopoly. Well, we decided to get him into our studio and ask him ourselves. That's next time on Commons. That's your episode of Commons. If you like this episode, please leave us a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. This episode relied on work done by Vass Bednar, Keldon Bester, Brian Sheffens, and many others. If you want to get in touch with us, you can tweet us at CommonsPod. You can also email me, archie@canadaland.com. This episode was produced by me and Jordan Cornish, with additional production by Noor Azria. Our production coordinator is Andre Pruhl, and our music is by Nathan Burley. You can listen to Commons ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. If you value this podcast, please support us. We rely on listeners like you paying for journalism. And as a supporter, you'll get premium access to all our shows ad-free, including early releases and bonus content. And you'll get our exclusive newsletter, discounts on Canadaland merch, invites and tickets to our live and virtual events. And more than anything, you'll be a part of the solution to Canada's journalism crisis, and you'll be keeping our work free and accessible to everybody. Come join us now. Click the link in your show notes or go to canadaland.com/join.
So we've been making Commons for 5 years now. It's over 100 episodes and counting. And our plan? Well, it's to keep making more seasons, even more episodes. And when I say we, I don't just mean the Commons team. I'm including you, our listeners and supporters. We can't make this show without you. We can't keep bringing you exceptional reporting every week without your support. We want to make it as easy as possible for you to become a CanadaLand supporter. So from now until the end of May, we have a special deal for our listeners. Sign up now for just $2 a month for the next 6 months. You'll get access to all the episodes of Commons 1 week early and ad-free, as well as exclusive bonus content from all of our shows. There's discounts on merch, tickets to our live events, and so much more. This is a limited-time offer, and it's a pretty great deal that helps support our journalism. Just go to canadaland.com/join or click the link in your show notes to become a supporter today. This episode is brought to you in part by the Douglas Mattress. Now, I've said it before and I'll say it again. One of the best, and I mean the best things you can do for yourself is to get a good quality mattress. The time is now, people. Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress protector, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That's douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.